You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Celebration 2022 is finally here, and I am so honored to be joined by my guests today to hear some of their stories from Celebration's past. Let's begin with introductions. Ed Thomas is joining us via Zoom. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Ed Thomas. My Tlingit name is Zahu. I'm originally from Craig. I am the past president of Tlingitida Central Council, former CLS board member.
And Barbara Blake, how about you? Would you please introduce yourself?
Barbara Blake, my name is Wathal Gidok. My English name is Barbara Blake. I am the daughter of Sandra Demert and Ken Johnson. My family is from Prince of Wales Island. I am Tlingit and Haida on my mother's side. I'm Yaak Janos, Raven from the Shark House. And my father's people come from Chestachina, and my father is Otanathabaskan.
And Jacqueline Estes, would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, and first let me say I'm happy to be here, Shelley. So my name is Jacqueline Estes, and my Tlingit name is Yutua. My family is originally from Wrangell, and I've lived in Juneau and Anchorage for decades now. And I actually used to work at KTOO, and it's nice to be back.
That's great. I heard that you had worked here before. I bet it looks a lot different, huh?
Actually, well, the shape of the building hasn't changed, but it's been remodeled. It looks really good.
Thank you. Gunaschish. It's great to have everyone here, and today you will all be sharing some of your memories and stories of past celebrations. We have a little audio from the very first performance of the Shanku KD dance group at the 1982 celebration. So I'd like to play that first, if you don't mind. Let me get that set up here. Oops. Okay, here we go. That was audio from 1982, the very first performance of the Shanku KD dance group. Jacqueline, I understand you were there at the first celebration in 1982. Mm-hmm. What do you remember?
Well, it was so different because it was small. There were maybe 100, maybe 200 people there. And I don't know if people are familiar with it, but out at 3 Mile, there's a community, what used to be a community center. And it's not very big. It's not anywhere as big as Centennial Hall. And we filled it up. The Alaska Native Sisterhood cooked food. And so the day included a lot of speeches and some ceremonies and lunch and dance performances. And so Celebration has evolved over the years, and now you still have speeches and ceremonies, but there's a little bit more emphasis, wouldn't you say, Barbara, on dance performances? Mm-hmm. And so you can watch dance group after dance group after dance group. And then in other places, there are other things going on. So like Wrangell is the host dance group for Celebration this year. And we had a naming ceremony yesterday down at the Juno Yacht Club, and a lunch and a dance rehearsal. And so you have things, and I heard about other events that other people were having. So you know, the more formal things are generally off to the side. And then we have the, and some formal things happen at celebration itself on the main stage, so to speak.
Yeah. Very cool. Thanks for sharing that. Ed and Barbara, I want to hear about your first memories of celebration. Ed, let's start with you. What do you recall from your first celebration that you attended or were a part of?
Well, I really did not make it to celebration until the late 1980s, maybe even 1990. I was still living in Ketchikan when the early celebrations took place, and did not move to Juneau until 1984. And then that was in the fall of that year, so I missed even that year's celebration. But what I remember was there were a lot of people, number one, but I was impressed that there was a lot of children involved by that time. And the younger kids were learning from the elders and really doing a good job of, you know, keeping the songs going and participating. Also, I remember the enthusiasm of the audience. People came and seemed to stay and really enjoy the performances, but also visiting. People were good at visiting, and going out and meeting one another.
We were commenting on the enthusiasm in that sound clip that we listened to. Everyone sounds very excited. It sounded like a very high energy moment when the dance group was performing. Barbara, how about you? What's the first celebration you remember? What was your experience like?
Well, so I'm as old as celebration. It started the year I was born, but I don't have a memory until I was about 12 years old, going to first celebration and participating and watching and witnessing. I remember just all kinds of excitement all around me, and being able to run in and out and through the crowds and seeing people having conversations. I think the thing that stands out to me the most when you ask that question was having a conversation with my grandpa, who was Franklin Demmert Sr., who was still alive at that time, and asking him if he spoke Tlingit, and him telling me that he could understand it, but he couldn't speak it. And I remember thinking at 12 years old, like, wow, like I wonder what it's like to understand a language but not be able to speak it, and what that must feel like to listen to our people speak a language that probably he hadn't heard in a very long time, and to hear them speak it out loud in a public space instead of feeling like they had to hide it. So I just remember that moment and being pretty amazed at my grandfather at that moment.
That does sound memorable and very impactful. You can see how that might influence a young person to maybe pursue learning to speak and understand it. Oh, thank you guys for sharing those memories. Ed, before you became president of the Tlingit and Haida Central Council in 1984, you were director of the Ketchikan Indian School District and trying to get cultural programs in the schools. What were some of the challenges you faced with that?
Yeah, it was. I was actually the director of Indian Education. The challenges were trying to get it actually into the school, to the classroom. We had one school, Valley Park, that embraced the entire, you know, idea of languages being taught in the school. But the other schools were very reluctant. And so we had to have an after school program for kids in those other schools. The high school also embraced the program, not in the language sense, but in interviewing some of the elders and writing their stories in a publication, and tracking things in the native community that were worth following. So the high school students did that. Our after-school programs were really very good. We had all three languages, the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. And the participation was excellent in my opinion. And we went right on into the summer with those after school programs and did not really take much of a break. So it really worked out quite well.
How did celebration help to amplify cultural identity for Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people? Ed, I'll start with you, but let everyone chime in.
Well, number one, it brought back the pride that people had in their culture. And also, it stimulated people learning the language, whether you're Tlingit, Haida, or Tsimshian. This became natural because what happens when you're learning a song and a dance in Tlingit, for example, the teacher will explain the importance of that song or the dance and explain oftentimes that they had to get permission from the clan that owned the song, particularly if it's a ceremonial song. So that helped people become very familiar with, how the culture is stimulated by song and dance and reinforced over time by the performances.
Jacqueline, would you add anything to that?
Well, I just add to what both Barbara and Ed said, which is that celebration has been kind of, it's been very powerful, both in stimulating and encouraging and fostering language and learning about the traditional cultures of the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. And but I think what it actually really means is it's like a huge get-together. You know, you get to see people you might not, well, I mean, I saw people I haven't seen in 4 years. And, you know, so it's a great, great time. You know, I mean, all of a sudden it's like you're just hugging. I mean, how many hugs do you get in a day normally? Like a couple maybe. And all of a sudden you're like 5, 10, 20 hugs, you know, just one person after another, relatives and people you went to school with and all kinds of people. It's really a joyful, joyful time. And I'm so glad we can do it in person.
You know, I don't know if you've ever had this feeling, Shelley, but I've had this experience a few times where my heart recognizes something, whether it be a dance or a song or hearing someone speak in our languages, but my mind doesn't recognize it, if that makes sense. It's like my soul knows and understands and remembers it, and maybe it's in our DNA, but I think celebration is like that. It's a reawakening of our heart and our soul in a space where a lot of that was put to sleep. And so what I think of when I think of celebration is just this reawakening of all these things. And I think there's a memory that is a collective memory. And we understand that as Native people, that there's a collective memory that when you put two people who have experienced something in the room together, and one person remembers bits and pieces of something that had taken place that the other person had forgotten, then all of a sudden you have a whole story. And so that's what also takes place during celebration, is that all of our people come together and just piece together these components of our history and the components of our culture that have been put to sleep, and all of their contributions together kind of make it complete and whole again.
And that's a beautiful sentiment.
Let me add one more thing.
Please do.
Yeah, the videos that are produced are also very much used after celebration by communities and dance groups, etc. So that video production really becomes, you know, an ongoing reinforcement.
Yeah, it's a way. Oh, sorry.
Good. I'm done.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. The videos are a good way for dance groups to learn songs that they want to perform the next time they get together, and people can rehearse, you know, by watching the videos and learning.
And we are so grateful to SHI, who has archived years and years of celebration on their website. That's where the sound clip came from today. And I think Lori Townsend mentioned it on Talk of Alaska a couple days ago, too, just being able to go back and watch some of her grandchildren dance and in a celebration, you know, that she probably saw at the time but wants to go back and watch again. So I think that's cool. Really cool. Very grateful to have that archive. We were talking about the gathering, right? Whether it's reuniting with friends and family or awakening a collective memory, does the very act itself of gathering the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people, so many together, send a message to society at large?
Yeah, we're still here. So, yeah, I think it was very much suppressed. And it was not something that people were proud of before. I mean, the thought of us being able to hold a parade, for instance, it just never would have crossed anybody's mind. You know, I mean, at most before a celebration, what you would see is one float during the 4th of July parade, which is great, but now we have our own parade. So it is. It's really amazing. To make people conscious. Sorry. Nope. I keep stepping on people.
Happens all the time on this show, especially. No, thanks for that. Barbara, Ed, would either of you add anything?
Yeah, I would totally agree with what Jacqueline has said. You know, there's a message to the world that needs to be remembered when we're looking at our children and our grandchildren, and that in their who they are and everything that they get to be, that they should no longer have to hide who they are as Native people. And any system or institution that forces them to tuck who they are away in their pocket when they step in the door is not meant for them. And that we still have so many of these that take place in our society today. And it just helps them to kind of hold their culture on their chest like a suit of armor, so that they can walk into any space and feel confident that their culture is guiding them, that their ancestors are with them, and that our people are standing with them in all spaces.
Yeah, okay. Ed, anything to add to that?
Yes. Well, in my generation growing up in Craig, it was not so much hiding as having to choose, that we were led to believe that in order to succeed in our modern society and in live in the capitalistic society, you had to abandon your past and embrace education of the future. So many of us were led to believe that, God, if you just hang on to your cultural part, you're really gonna lag behind everybody else and not be competitive. Either being a great fisherman or being a good student in college or whatever else, or even in the workplace, that you had to really understand the ways of the dominant society. And oftentimes we're led to believe that you couldn't do that by hanging on to the culture. So that's just an addition to what was already said. Mm.
Ed, if you and your generation had been able to grow up with celebration, would that have made a difference in your life?
I really think so, but I really don't know for sure. Because as I grew older and became more familiar with the cultural practices and ceremonies and who I am as a person, I really got to appreciate it a lot. And when I was 12 and 13 years old, I didn't appreciate anything.
Does anybody when they're that age? Well, Barbara, you told a story from when you were 12 years old, so somebody was able to get through to you, at least, at celebration, no less. And what about you, Barbara? What's it been like to raise your kids in a time when celebration is a part of the fabric of their lives and also the language programs in the schools? How's that been for you?
I'll just say that my kids teach me more than I could have ever hoped to learn. They know how to speak Tlingit and Hodkil better than I can. My son is 15 now, and when I need to know how to say something in Tlingit, I'm like, hey, how do you say this? And I show him, or I ask him, like, what is this thing called in Tlingit? And it's amazing that they just, they don't have to walk in this world questioning who they are. And so I'm like, wow, like, he just gets to be born into it, right? Like, I wasn't born into it. And took a few years before we got to the place where we were celebrating it, because I lived in Anchorage and Eagle River for a little while. But he's there. My kids are there, and they just love it. They love dancing, and they love singing, and they love being able to express their culture, and they're really proud of it. And they like to share with everybody. So I appreciate watching them do that.
Mm, that fills my heart. I wish every child had had that experience, to be born into where, who and what and where they belong. Jacqueline, in your role as a national correspondent for Indian Country Today, how does celebration fit in with the national worldview, this cultural revival of Native Alaskan culture, Southeast Alaskan culture, Indigenous people worldwide?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question. So I'm a national correspondent. I'm based in Anchorage, and I do stories about lower 48 tribes, which has been a real eye-opener. I've really learned a lot about other tribes, and it's really, really interesting. I don't get to travel very much, though, and I would say that there's been a renaissance going on across the country, and I like to think that Indian Country Today is part of that, because we have, I mean, Indian Country Today started out, when I went to work there 2 years ago, I think there were five or eight of us, and I can't say for sure because I know some people were part-time or on loan from other organizations or on contracts, and now we have 24 employees, and we're just churning out news from all over the country like you wouldn't believe. And the reason that's been possible is because the readership has grown so much. And so you have, and most of our readers are in New York and California, you know, places with a big population. But we have readers all, actually, we have readers around the world. And so I like to think that we're a reflection of the Renaissance that's been kind of bubbling up for decades. And now we're being a part of it too.
Yeah, okay. Well, as we wind down here, I wanted to give everybody one last chance to say anything that they're feeling or thinking, or share your favorite part of celebration before we all say goodbye. So, Ed Thomas, is there anything you'd like to share before we sign off?
No, just a big thank you for covering this, because I think it's important for people to hear about celebration, because it is such an ongoing event that really means a lot to us in Southeast Alaska.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Yeah, Gunashchish, we are honored to cover this event. Barbara, how about you?
Yeah, just a thank you to you and you, Shelley, and to Rhonda for pulling this together. And then just one quick message out to everybody from my parents' generation on. I know that there's a lot of folks who don't feel like, or don't recognize that their knowledge is so important, but even like a story about growing up means so much to us. And so I just had that moment the other day with my aunt, who was sitting on my couch yesterday because she was waiting to check into her hotel room, and just sharing stories about being kids and growing up and going to potlatch. I gained so much from just that like 1 hour conversation. And so the more folks can share with us, the more we want to absorb it like sponges. And I'm thankful for our generations that are continuing to pass on their knowledge.
So, you know, we divide ourselves, the Tlingit, into eagles and ravens. And then you give youngsters their Indian name. And it's usually a name from your clan and your moiety. And Ishmael Hope, actually, I want to give him a shout out for helping me pick out a name for my great nephew. And he sent me the name in as a text, and it was spelled T-O-O-S. And so I told my niece, who told her son, that his Indian name was going to be Toos, which means shark. And he was so excited and so thrilled. And then we found out that actually it's more like Taus. And I apologize if I'm, you know, mispronouncing both those words. So it was a little bit of a letdown for him to find out he was his name, Indian name didn't mean shark. And I mentioned the moieties because shark wouldn't have fit in with our clan names. So, but the reason he even knew the word is because of the language programs here in Juneau, which, I mean, I think it's really a great thing for this Juneau School District to be as proactive. And I'm, you know, I live in Anchorage, so I don't know, but from the outside looking in, it does seem like an active, strong program. So kudos to the Juneau School District for that. And thanks so much for having us today.
Of course. It's my pleasure. Ed Thomas, President Emeritus of Tlingit and Haida, Barbara Blake, Alaska Native Policy Director for First Alaskans Institute, and also an Assemblywoman, and Jacqueline Estes, National Correspondent for Indian Country Today. Thank you, Gunashchish Hawa, for being here today, and I hope you have a great week at Celebration. I did want to mention that Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is sponsoring a live statewide broadcast of Celebration on public television's 360, KTO's 360 TV, over the air, on cable, on the web, and the KTOO Roku app. So live coverage began with the campus opening today and continues from the main stage at Centennial Hall through Saturday night's grand exit. So tune into that. Thanks again.